It is February 10th, 2019. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott. And it is 1 degree outside.
And this is Fancy Ramen, a podcast about video games and other things nerd culture. That
Fancy Ramen, a nerd adjacent podcast.
Wait, we're not a sports podcast?
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
Oh, do you guys want to talk about the Super Bowl?
Oh, no. I think
good job. We talked
NBA
about the Super
season.
Bowl.
Yeah. We did. It's over.
Now we're getting taken down because we didn't say the big game.
The big game. 2019. Team Liquid faced off against FlyQuest in League Championship Series. League of Legends Championship Series. I'm just arranging pills right now. Cookie, you're back from the dead. You haven't been infected by the virus, the G virus, the T virus, or the UA virus. So good on you.
What do they call the one that attacks everybody in Resident Evil 4? It's like a parasite, right? It's not a virus.
What were they called?
Ganados?
Maybe.
Las Plagas. It's just the plague in Spanish.
Las Plagas. Wow. Fascinating.
But they also have the Illuminati. Los Illuminados, which is the enlightened ones.
It's not the illuminated?
No, it is not. So it's Plagas. So where the hell did I get Ganados from? Any
The typical zombie enemies
head?
Are called Ganados.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Sure. I don't know. Well, cool. Cookie did not say he didn't succumb to that, so we'll have to keep an eye on him for
Twitches.
Parasite-style things like exploding out of his head.
Are you feeling itchy, scratchy, hungry?
Do you feel like a suplex would be bad for your composition?
I think a suplex would do me just fine.
Okay, what? I think he's all right.
What about a roundhouse kick?
That's pushing it.
Uh-oh, he's the other enemy type.
Might still be, yeah.
I mean, Neil's always wearing robes. Either one of you guys have trademark characteristics of succumbing to a Resident Evil style virus and or plague.
Yep. I got sick last week. Didn't decide to take my temperature until I started feeling much, much better, which should be concerning as my temperature at the time I started feeling a lot better was 102.8.
I'm really glad to hear that you are actually alive.
I was like, man, I feel like shit today. And then Sunday came about and I was like, oh, I am feeling so much better today. Like, I'm alive. Oh, you know what I should do? I should probably take my temperature. Oh, God.
I still have a lethal fever.
Okay. Guess I'm going to lay back down.
Unless you're feeling better because you were in that, like, feverish fugue state where you just got so bad that you didn't feel bad anymore. And hopefully you were actually doing okay with all the other times you weren't feeling as good.
Hopefully. Who knows? Either way, Lizzie was calling me a bitch that Saturday. And then after I took my temperature that Sunday, she was like, okay, well, lesson learned. I guess that one time I made you get up and hold the dog down while he was in the bath was probably a bad idea.
Did you bathe your dog this last weekend or this weekend?
Lizzie bathed the dogs this last weekend. We were
Sierra
also
finally bathed our stinky, stinky, rank, rancid dog. It's so nice to see him with, like, fur that is not shiny due to, I assume, grease, and shiny because his coat is now freshly washed and fluffy.
Yay?
Yeah, I didn't realize how nasty our dog was until a couple of weeks ago, and then we've been meaning to bathe him and just kept forgetting until he was literally laying on my lap underneath me, and I was like, our dog smells terrible. We need to wash him now. He's passively offensive.
Nice.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had to tie in on that because that was a big, like, you know, that was a big experience for me this last week.
Dog's first wash.
So Cookie,
not
did you
first
take,
wash, but most important.
Cookie, did you take any time off from work, or were you just sick on the weekend?
Yeah, I was out Monday.
I'm just curious because I tend to, on occasion, like anyone else, also get sick. And it's just weird to reflect on how when we got sick as kids, it was like, all right, time to play some fucking video games. But now as an adult, when we're sick, or when I miss work, I'm out. I'm like miserable on, yeah.
Yeah, because that's the way life is. Now that you, when you actually get sick, you're dying. Otherwise,
and you
got
to work
adult.
To live.
Yep. Otherwise, you're an adult. You just go to work.
I was legitimately sick as a kid, too. It's like I would have the flu and be vomiting, but you better believe I had like a controller
still
in my hand.
Playing video games.
I played a
That's
lot
true.
Of Shining Force, sick as a, like, no offense to your dog, Scott, but sick as a dog.
My dog is sick. I had the same experience where I would have maybe three blankets, like heavy blankets on me, and I'd be sweating out a fever, but I'd also have my Game Boy in bed.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. But now it truly is like if I'm sick, I'm sleeping for like 12 hours straight. And my work actually has a fairly like, they're very good about me being sick because they're just like, if you're sick and you're going to infect anybody, like GTFO, they're very understanding about that. But
that's how all work should be.
It's how they should be. Absolutely. No, I my employers are really wonderful people, but sometimes I'm like, I don't want to leave because I can't miss this paycheck. So I'm just going to go cough and wheeze in this corner.
Were we just tougher as kids? Was that just the thing that you were trying to get at, Neil?
I think we're more focused on recovering as adults.
No,
as
I
a
think
kid,
we were just tougher as kids.
I don't know. I think as a kid, the longer you're sick, the more time you get off. And that's a positive.
But as a kid, though, you also know that you're going to live as an adult.
You're rolling the dice every
you
time.
You stub your toe and it's a life or death situation.
Says the guy who doesn't check his temperature until like 3 days after he should have died.
Yeah.
Anyway, you been up to anything else this weekend?
This weekend?
This week?
Or the past week?
Recently?
I was going to say, last weekend, I did stream 5 hours of Kingdom Hearts 3. And my God, I've got to tell you guys about this game.
Good.
And its flaws.
Oh. Also good.
I guess I'll just segue right into that then. Fuck it.
Yeah, I don't have much to talk about this week, so.
That's fine. I already talked about my stinky dog.
So, what is the hallmark of a great story in a multi-part video game?
Tie-ins to previous stories. Twists that impact outcomes that you only had revelations about in previous stories. If we're talking multiple games, what you've got to do is create a deeper understanding of the storyline or how you view the characters in previous iterations, as well as the most recent one.
That's beautifully said.
You forgot about the one thing that is important to all video game stories, and that's to get rid of
Mickey Mouse.
Well, okay, that's also a good joke, but to get rid of all of your Squaresoft characters, too. Get rid of those Final Fantasy characters.
Have to toss out everyone who's not within... Did they have to toss out IP characters? Is that part of the problem?
I don't think it was a legal thing or anything. It's just, and again, this I don't consider this a spoiler because I haven't played the game or anything or even attempted to do anything to that degree. I just heard that apparently all the Final Fantasy characters are missing.
Weird.
So far, I haven't seen any real Final Fantasy characters. But also, what makes a bad multi-game story?
You replace Mickey Mouse with Kermit.
I think that might be better, actually.
I don't know. Mickey's not that bad.
Kermit's pretty great, though, too. Like, has Kermit in a featured, like a long featured fantasy RPG adventure yet?
Probably.
No. I'd play a Muppets-themed RPG.
It'd be pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, what I'm getting at is one of my to put this into good context, I watched a YouTube video from this dude. He's like, that guy is like about like the guy who buys Kingdom Hearts 3 on the Xbox One. And so far, like, so basically the video is like, okay, so he starts playing and he's like, what is going on? So, because they just name drop all the villains and try and somewhat not get you up to speed on what happened on the last 15 games. and it's just super confusing. And then he like Googles whether or not the other old titles came out on Xbox. They did not, apparently. Apparently you cannot get 1.5, 2.5, 2.8 on Xbox.
I mean, I found it suspect that it was even on Xbox in the first place.
It is very suspect that it's on Xbox.
Well, it's...
But, yeah.
They're not going to release it on Xbox, though. Like, this is... This release is arguably as big as Resident Evil 2 Remake.
They should definitely have already released it on Xbox. It should have been just shittily ported over, even if it was just video versions. But, you know, a game is... a lot of fun and really bad when I'm recommending it to some of my friends, but I also tell them, hey, before you actually purchase this game,
sign this NDA.
I'm gonna need you to go to YouTube, and I'm gonna need you to look up like at least 3 videos of the story so far of what's going on in Kingdom Hearts to get a somewhat semblance of what is going on in Kingdom Hearts, and also don't click on a video that's less than 30 minutes because it's not going to actually go over what the fuck is going on.
So, did you find yourself puzzled and confused as you started the game, or did you feel like the amount of refreshing that you had done leading up to Kingdom Hearts 3 had prepared you enough for what the story has been so far?
So, with the me also watching 3 videos, so... So here's how it went. I get home from work, unwrap my copy of Kingdom Hearts 3, and decide, yes, I'm going to start playing this, and it's going to be beautiful. And then I'm like, I have no idea what the fuck is going on. And I was also still preparing anyway of what I should be doing. I rebeat Kingdom Hearts 2.8 before it came out, so I was like, okay, I'm good on this. Yeah, nah. And there were so many things. Just so much happens. Every game that you come out with should not be as important as it is. Long story short, Kingdom Hearts. So, yeah, every game that came out with Kingdom Hearts is super important to the overall story.
Wouldn't that normally be the case, though? Like, Mass Effect 1 is equally important to Mass Effect 3 as Mass Effect 2 is, right?
Considering I never beat Mass Effect 1, but beat Mass Effect 2, ish. I didn't do the last mission of Mass Effect 2, and I still kind of got what was going on.
But Mass Effect 2 also has the DLC. Okay, so maybe I'm invalidating my point, but I feel in spirit the idea behind the intro to Mass Effect 2, the cutscene thing that you can play out and make the choices that are relevant in the first game, is more or less giving you like the ultimate shortened version of Mass Effect 1.
Yeah.
See, and that works. That works great if there's one game that you're referencing. It doesn't work great if there are 12.
Do you think all of them are equally as important? Or can you just play Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2 and then play 3? Like, if this is... God, that... No, but really, like, if this is Sora's journey, don't you just want to play the games that he's the main character in, which I'm assuming is 1, 2, and 3?
Neil, oh, stop. He can't breathe.
Yeah, 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 just... Yeah, just play 1 and 2. You'll understand. No, Neil, that doesn't work. Neil, I'll tell you what, I skipped Kingdom Hearts, whatever, Rechain of Memories, Decoded, whatever it was fucking called, and it turns out that was a major fucking plot point. The one that barely gets any mention, that you think is just a straight reboot of a different game, is also super important as its own standalone game, Neil. It's bad. It's super bad. Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh so much. I just found it funny.
I'm not cutting any of that down.
That's some of the best audio we've recorded. Yeah.
So, I mean, is that the problem? Is the main problem with Kingdom Hearts that they just have the worst naming convention?
Actually, I think they've leaned into their naming conventions so hard that as you're starting the game, the first splash screen you get isn't actually Kingdom, like after you start playing the game, is not actually Kingdom Hearts 3. You know, when like you play a game for 15 minutes and then it goes, this is the name of the game, splash screen, how they're doing that nowadays. Yeah, it goes Kingdom Hearts 2.9 as like the tutorial worlds, and that made me laugh out loud. I loved it. Yeah. Yeah, they've leaned into the naming convention. They're like, yeah, no, this got ridiculous, guys. We understand. Also, here's your here's your tutorial world, Kingdom Hearts 2.9. And then after you finish that world, then it does the splash screen of Kingdom Hearts 3. Because it's like, now you know how to play, kind of, more or less.
Maybe Kingdom Hearts was just so innovative that it was early access games before early access even existed. This is the 2.7 beta patch for Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, no, this game is it's beautiful. It's a lot of fun. I recommend that everyone should play it. I also recommend no one should play it. I've waited so long for this game, and it is great. There's a panic button. Panic-ish button. It's a good story once you understand kind of what's going on, but even then you're still filling in some of the blanks. Because I was like, why are we calling... Like, during the first cut screen, they're, like, name-dropping a shit ton of characters, but they're also name-dropping the characters in their new names that they got after one of the games. So, slight spoiler, if you haven't played all 13 Kingdom Hearts games.
Bam! I'm raising my hand. I have not played any of the 13 Kingdom Hearts games.
Cool. So there's this guy named Axel. He's a nobody. Apparently he's no longer a nobody, but an actual full-fledged human whose name is actually Lee. Now, you don't get that Lee is Axel unless you've played Kingdom Hearts. Oh God, I need to look up the game. It's decoded. Nope. Kingdom Hearts Recoded, which is Kingdom Hearts on the, what I thought was just Kingdom Hearts on the Nintendo DS, just like kind of revamped. But apparently in that one, Sora's been digitized because Ansem the Wise, or maybe Ansem, or maybe Xehanort, one of those three, put Sora to sleep, took away his memories, but also encoded a book of like notes and shit into his DNA. So they digitized Sora and went on an epic adventure, and on that adventure they defeated Organization 13 by turning them all back into humans, thus solving Organization 13's main issue. But then that turns out that was the fake Organization 13, because the real Organization 13 was actually built for Xehanort / Ansem, not Ansem the Wise, wanting to split his own heart into 13 pieces of darkness, so they're the true Organization 13, but there's also still a false Organization 13, and there's this group of enemies that I just found out, it's called the Unversed, that apparently are important about the story, but I didn't realize this because I didn't know they even existed. So yeah.
Right, yeah, of course. I follow you.
Neil, yeah. Are you dizzy yet? I'm real dizzy.
I mean, Organization 13, they're the people with the black clothes on, right?
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I'm so smart. I already know all the lore.
Yeah, I thought most Mickey of those guys wore black robes.
He's not a part of the organization. But for a second there, Sora was actually a part of the organization as well.
The fuck is going on with this?
But not in the form of Roxas, because Sora has Roxas's heart, who's actually Ventus? Who's actually Ventus, because Ventus was one of the original three Keyblade Warriors, not to be confused. Nope, they were actually Keyblade Masters, Ventus, Aqua, and What's-His-Face. But yeah, there was a lot going on. There are a lot of characters named Xehanort, Ansem, Ansem the Wise. There are two different characters named. Yen Sid's also in this, because yeah. Hi, Kingdom Hearts. That is not the most confusing way that I could have given you the synopsis of the game I did not play, but
it's nice to know that Ventus is the final clue I needed to understand Starbucks naming convention for the size of their coffee.
So, is there a Steven Universe tie-in at some point here?
God, I really hope so. I really hope so. I'll say that we got to finish watching the last Steven bomb, which was fucking beautiful.
Oh, God.
It was like an hour-long episode.
I led you off topic. Let's get you back. Let's rein you back in for a second. Kingdom Hearts 3, you've been playing it. It's a game. Does it play well? Is the story invigorating?
I went through a very, very big range of emotions in the first 3 hours of gameplay. From just like the... So you turn on the game, you're excited. They start going over story things, you're confused. Then they do the... Yutari Hikaru, they actually don't, whatever her name is, I forget her name, love her, who does the simple and clean intro. They do her like thing. It actually turned off my stream and only allowed my actual audio, like of my mic, to actually stream that part. It was so beautiful. It had me like my eyes were watering. I was also apparently probably actually getting sick at this point, but that doesn't matter. Eyes were watering. It was beautiful. Then it hit me with the Kingdom Hearts 2.9 splash screen, and I was laughing out loud. I went through all the emotions, Neil. This game is beautiful. It is a must play. It is going to be a 10 out of 10 for me, but not really a 10 out of 10 gameplay wise, not really a 10 out of 10 story wise for aforementioned. They gave us a game where there were 17 different Kingdom Hearts titles that you have to play them all, and one's a mobile game to understand what the fuck is going on story wise. This is so convoluted. If you want a good idea of an insulting review versus and like a very accurate review at the same time as Girlfriend Reviews, that YouTube channel that's out now.
That's a good channel.
They do Kingdom Hearts 3, and it's pretty much her usual thing is, this isn't a review of someone playing Kingdom Hearts 3 or someone playing this game. This is a review of living with someone who plays this game. She goes, this isn't a review of someone playing Kingdom Hearts 3. This is a review of not knowing what the fuck is going on during Kingdom Hearts 3. Because I also am not 100% sure of what is going on.
And you're the resident expert.
Yes. I did not realize how... No, I knew how deep this rabbit hole went. As a matter of fact, I was thinking to myself, you know what makes total sense? The Legend of Zelda timeline. That's just... That's
it's only,
open
only and, got three branches.
Yeah, that's open and cut. Man, this one... Fucking... I think I know what might be going on, and... Man, I don't think this is the last game either. I definitely don't think this is the last game. Or if it's the last game, things are just going to get super fever pitched. It's bad.
I thought it was pitched as a finale, but I could be wrong.
Is it pitched as a finale? That's good.
You bring up a good point in that Legend of Zelda does have like a convoluted timeline, but it's also written to be enjoyed one piece at a time.
Exactly. This one, not so much.
So it really does require that prior knowledge. Otherwise, like, your experience, at least through the story, is just, like, that stunted?
Yeah, because anytime any character is speaking about another character, each character at this point has at least two different names, except for King Mickey, who's just King Mickey, but everyone else. Sora's got six fucking hearts in him right now. I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Is there a possibility that maybe Sora is gathering seven hearts so he can break through the barrier that separates video game characters to human characters? Is this an Undertale reference?
I'm happy for you because I don't think you know this, but he's actually on a quest of gathering the seven hearts of light right now. And then the Organization 13, not the true Organization 13, but the backup Organization 13 is also... putting together, like, the story of Kingdom Hearts 3 is Maleficent's looking for a black box, which I think is the box that the original master gave to the one of the original eight Keyblade masters, who he sent off on his own, but that's going to be in reference to the mobile game. But Sora's looking for the 7 hearts of light to fight the 7 hearts of dark, the 13 hearts of darkness, in order to start the Keyblade War, I guess. I'm not 100% sure. But then fake Organization 13, they're actually going through and going to all these Disney worlds of this universe now in Kingdom Hearts 3 to gather 7 backup hearts of light just in case Sora fails in his mission of getting 7 hearts of light. And I'm like, why are the bad guys looking for 7 hearts of light? Elsa and Anna are 2 of the hearts of light, it turns out. Yeah, so when you mentioned that Sora was looking for 7 hearts, I was like, yeah, he actually is.
So this the time, have you guys ever seen NBC's comedy, The Good Place?
Yes.
So they explain the timeline at one point in time as Jeremy Baramy, and I feel like this is fitting for about the same level of straightforwardness. And Neil, if you haven't seen it, essentially they're trying to explain the way that the time, like that the timeline works throughout the universe, and it ends up looping over itself to look like it's a cursive signature of someone named Jeremy Baramy. It's a good clip, but this is all I can think about when I hear the Kingdom Hearts storyline at this point and timeline.
Yeah, it's...
and naming convention.
Yeah, there's... Oh, man. Naming conventions. Oh, just Kingdom Hearts.
I don't know how to trust Cookie's 10 out of 10, because with Kingdom Hearts, I don't know if that actually equates to like a 7 out of 5 or if it's a perfect score.
Oh, man. Just like... So, just on the... Kingdom Hearts Wikipedia page, just like naming characters, you have Sora, Riku, Roxas, Terra, Ventus, Aqua. Great, right?
Sure. Continue.
You've got... Oh, gosh. Where does it get confusing? Xehanort. Our Xehanort is one of the main bad guys who... kills, quote-unquote, Anson the Wise, and then takes Anson's name. And then he also becomes Master Xehanort. He is also Terra Xehanort, a.k.a. Ansem. He's Xemnas and Young Xehanort.
Are these, like, all boss transformations or something?
One would wish, but they all exist at the same time.
Huh. Yeah, the fact that you have named, like, you named your like main characters or protagonists, and then an antagonist has a name for each one of them to potentially conflict with, has already left me by the wayside. I think the joke's getting old that I'm confused, because I don't think I'm digging myself out of this or climbing out of this hole. But
oh, don't worry, it's bad. It's just as bad as you think it is.
How's the gameplay?
Oh, the gameplay is spectacular. It's beautiful. There are like lots of pretty things going on at all times. The transformations feel crisp and tight. The buttons. Oh, it's
you push
10
'em.
Out of 10 gameplay.
Okay,
10 out of 10 gameplay. It's honestly really pretty. They got lots of fun, crazy ass mini games. There was one where I was collecting. Oh, God, what's like the little, I don't want to call it phlegm, but flam, you know, from Courage the Cowardly Dog, like the little jello.
Flan?
Yeah, flan, the jello pudding cups
yeah.
that they have in Japan. Like, you're collecting those, but they're also in the form of Heartless, and it's the, did you play Super Mario Odyssey?
I sure did.
You know how you can jump on a, not a Koopa's, what's the brown mushroom?
The Goomba?
Thing? Yeah, you know how you can jump on each of the Goombas to get to the highest Goomba, so that way you can kiss the girl or get to like the female Goomba.
Yeah,
they basically got a mini game like that in the Toy Story world.
But it's pudding.
Like, but it's pudding, and it's adorable. They've got like you use Little Chef from Ratatouille to like. There's a cooking system in there where that's a little mini game where you're the like cracking eggs, and if you do like a really good job, you get the double yolk egg.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you know you did really good. because you got the double yolked egg, and then there's like the flambé thing. There's a cutting one. Oh yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. Great, great, great gameplay. I am enjoying the shit out of the game. As soon as a character opens their mouth, I am taking notes, trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. But yeah, I will say story-wise, besides just being confused, Sora never grew up. Like, half the things that come out of his mouth, I'm like, you know, these games are like 20 years old now, right? He should be a little less silly, don't you, with some of the things that he's saying. And every once in a while, it's like, you're looking for these hidden emblems.
Isn't he a clown, though? Because he has the shoes.
Gotta love those shoes. And man, everyone should have zippers that big. You know those zippers are never going to fucking break. But either way, it's like, sometimes the characters will say something stupid, but a lot of the times I find it a lot more helpful now. Because every once in a while they're like, I think this is going to be a good place to get ingredients. So that way you can do more things. And you're like, well, yeah, this is going to be a good place to get ingredients. There's like takeout boxes and things. So I know that there's going to be ingredients here. Or this is going to be a good spot for an emblem. So you can take little pictures of things. And emblems are like just the Mickey Mouse silhouette. Are things that you want to take pictures of, and it's like, well, of course this is a good place for an emblem. There's one right here. But every once in a while, they'll be like, I think this is a good place to gather ingredients. And you're like in the middle of a forest, and you're like, oh, okay, I'm gonna go off and hunt for some truffles or some shit.
I mean,
they'll be like, this.
I imagine the game is still being made for kids. Like, obviously, it's still made for the people that played Kingdom Hearts when they were 10 years old and now are 30, but. Like, this has to also be made for kids to play. So those types of dialogue lines are probably there to, like, ensure that, you know, they're 12-year-old gamers or they're 13-year-old players all, like, understand what they need to do as well, right?
Neil, they threw out this game was made for kids when they started making every single game super important to the actual storyline.
But I mean,
that's kids don't care about storyline as well.
Right. That's the dichotomy they have here, because
I guess you make a good point, because each world is its own tiny little mini story.
And no matter how much they try to make this storyline like serious, I mean, not saying it's not serious, but no matter how complex and complicated the storyline and the timeline are, like, you still have the toys
Goofy
from Toy
and
Story,
Donald Duck,
Goofy
yeah.
and Daffy, Donald Duck.
Donald.
So it's like, an Daffy's 8-year-old will probably be super curious about what Kingdom Hearts 3 is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Woe is that 8-year-old who decides he wants to figure out what Kingdom Hearts 3 is and try and think about what's actually going on.
Every generation after us is smarter than we are, so maybe they'll piece
no
it
one's
together.
This smart, Neil Scott, god damn it.
It's okay, that's one of my seven names.
Pretty much. Yeah, this game's great. It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it and streaming pretty much every second of it that I like play, and it's gonna be a game I beat, and it's gonna be beautiful. I realize why we listened to the song Let It Go when it first came out. Like, that's just watching the terrible Kingdom Hearts version that was rendered made me think, man, that was a really good-ass fucking scene and song. God damn, that was cool as fuck. But yeah.
Are we going to hold you to that? That you're going to be Kingdom Hearts 3?
Oh, yeah. I've got no choice but to be Kingdom Hearts 3 at this point. Maybe. Who knows?
Okay.
I've also been playing a lot of Divinity Original Sin 2. But that I'll probably definitely beat because I'm playing that with my brother and wife. A lot of fun. I'm not sure if I got to talk about that game at all.
You did.
You brought it up last time. Yeah. And you got me interested until you said you were playing it on console and not PC.
I mean, just get it on console and you'll be able to join us. We pretty much play every day. Oh, and Neil, you are correct. The dump a dump the final boss in lava is a very good strategy of, God, what's that game called? Of Divinity Original Sin 2. It's a very, very good strategy of that.
I mean, speaking of turn-based and strategy, I picked up Wargroove over the week.
How are you enjoying that?
It is. I was hoping it would be just similar enough to the experience of Advanced Wars 2 that I could, you know, relive that nostalgic itch. But in all honesty, I like this game way more than the Advanced War 2 games. Advanced War 2 game that I used to play all the time, and the original Advanced Wars, because the minor tweaks that they've made in this game compared to the original format of those like definite inspirations to Wargroove is that they've added commanders sort of in a Fire Emblem style, where you have one like very powerful unit that you can use in combat. And so there is at least one more unique element to using your game or using your commander strategically in a game, not only by having a special ability that impacts the map, but having a special ability that impacts the map, but additionally having sort of one tank unit, no matter who you're playing as, that you can utilize to deal with pretty much any sort of like ground-based enemies. The game so far, I don't know how far I'm into the storyline, so I'll probably leave more time for the next podcast to talk about it. But it's pretty much taken every element from the Advanced Wars games and improved it in some sense. They have all of the mechanics you expect from these types of games, with fog of war and terrain defense, capturing towns for your revenue in order to buy units, and then units that are specialized for land, air, and sea, and sort of a rock, paper, scissors system between which units are vulnerable to other types of enemy units. It's got the customizable map building in order to access bonus content like art design or other like images in the gallery. You can complete missions from a 1 to 3 star scale, depending on how well you do. That's how fast you complete it, how many units die in a mission. And I don't know what other factors go into it, but then you can buy essentially bonus content to look at or read about. And they also have an arcade mode where every time you defeat or use a different commander than your starting commander is Mercia of Cherrystone, you unlock their arcade mode where you go through like a 5-commander gauntlet to beat the arcade version of the game, which is also a lot of fun because you get put into some pretty fun and unique maps that I think for the most part are symmetrical, unlike the story, which is normally asymmetrical maps. And I'm just having a blast with it. It's got beautiful pixel art, and the gameplay is kind of exactly what you would expect out of these like tactical unit strategy games.
Nice.
Yeah. Each commander's powers build up at a different rate, and they have some pretty unique functions. I've already played with one that increases like a defensive boost by laying down a like shield item, similar to, if anyone's played Overwatch, Symmetra's little her alternative shield instead of the teleport ultimate, where it can be destroyed by the enemy, but until it is, it provides like a hefty shield to your allies. The main character Mercia has like a group radius heal that's really nice, and then the best boy dog commander Caesar can inspire the units with his sweet golden retriever charm to give them an opportunity to move again, while other factions have less buff based special abilities that are sometimes focused more on doing damage or a like more complex use of powers based upon placement of enemy or allied units to move them around or dash through them in a checkers jump style attack. It's a really good game. I haven't done any map building yet, but I probably will, because that was one of the things I enjoyed the most about the Advance War games versus the Fire Emblem games, is for the multiplayer, you can actually build maps using all of the resources that the developers actually use to build the story and arcade mode maps. So you can get very creative with the situations and scenarios you build, which is probably the most fun part about these games, is playing maps that you've built with your friends as well. It has some of the best multiplayer strategy I've played in any type of game.
You said you haven't gotten too far into the story, but I was curious, does it play like a traditional Fire Emblem in that you can't grind, if that makes sense?
Yes. Because these units... really, the biggest difference between these types of games and the Fire Emblem games is the Fire Emblem games, your units gain experience and skill over time. Even a really great strategy game that I've played and talked about recently, or at least I did last year in 2017, Into the Breach, ultimately, like, your units, even though they do have some level of disposability, still gain experience. In this game, your units, even your commander themselves, like, they never build experience in any sense. They never get more powerful or stronger. They start off at their maximum effectiveness, and as they take damage or interact with other units, they lose that effectiveness. So ultimately, you don't have to worry about building up strength in this game besides getting into your war groove, getting into your groove and activating your special ability. That's the only thing that is benefited over time, but that's also strictly limited to whatever mission or encounter you're going through. And you can activate it multiple times within a mission, but it's not like you're able to carry over any of that progress on the bar. You start at zero every time you start a new combat encounter. And I guess also, like Fire Emblem, the overworld map, similar to especially the more recent Fire Emblems, but even back to sort of the Sacred Stones games, you have an overworld map that you travel upon, and you can select essentially like parallel or side quest stories while you're playing the main story in order to unlock new content for the arcade mode. But completing them does not give you any sort of benefit or like noticeable, I guess, change to the single player experience. So playing straight through only the story missions is the same experience as playing through the story missions and then unlocking the like parallel missions and then playing more of the story. There's no change to that experience. You just get a little more. Normally, you get some sort of battle that helps round out the characters a little bit, but besides like adding a little bit more flavor and depth to like characters and understanding their units and their personalities, it doesn't impact the story. It's nothing, nothing all that necessary. Like, I played one recently where you play as an enemy commander you've been struggling against, who's trying to defeat. You play as her trying to defeat an enemy commander, Caesar, and she doesn't know who Caesar is and doesn't find out Caesar's the dog that she's been fighting this whole time. Like, it's a relatively funny game. It's pretty lighthearted. And I don't know. It's written in the same way that the Advance War games are, where it doesn't have a huge amount of, you know, like actual emotional impact or punch. It's just following the template that these types of stories normally do. So there's nothing special there. But the comedic writing is not too bad, I guess.
I can dig it.
Were you waiting for me to say that?
No, I'm just saying, like, cool.
It's a fun game. If either of you guys... I'd like to know if this has... I haven't tried any sort of online functionality, but I imagine... you should be able to play online with your friends with your created maps. And so, since I picked it up on the Switch, and I think it's definitely best made for the Switch due to the handheld mode being reminiscent of the original Advance War games being for the Game Boy Advance primarily. But it would be a lot of fun to be able to play. Oh, yeah. Okay, so you can play with your friends both in local and online multiplayer skirmishes, and you can play up to four players, which those are honestly the most fun, is when you have four armies going at it at once on your custom maps. So, good game. Enjoying it a lot. I'll let you know if there's anything special about it as I continue forward and try and finish it up.
I can dig it. I said it this time. No, Wargroove looks really good. It's been kind of low-key on a list of games to get / play.
It certainly won't disappoint, especially if you liked any of the Advance War games or Fire Emblem is up your alley. Like, this is
or
helping
Final Fantasy
me.
Tactics.
Yeah, or Final Fantasy Tactics, absolutely. This is like helping me hold out until Fire Emblem Three Houses releases, and I can play more of that.
I keep forgetting that's a thing. Well, have you guys played any other games you want to talk about?
I'm going to pick up Slay the Spire, probably, but I haven't played it yet. It looks like it is sort of a mix between an RPG and a card game, and my close group of gaming friends outside of this fancy ramen crowd are all obsessed with it, and so I will...
Are you getting it on Switch?
I will make the risky move. I'm probably going to get it on PC.
Well, then you're dead to me.
I'm so sorry. I PC game primarily for all my online stuff and for my cheaper stuff too, but like slowly I'm being shifted more and more to the Switch. Like, console of the year last year was definitely the Nintendo Switch, because I'm looking at my library now and realizing that almost all of the best games I've played, I either would prefer to be on the Switch as opposed to in my like Steam library, or are on the Switch. It's just been a real spectacular console for indie gaming and regular console gaming. But yeah,
this looks really good.
Yeah, I'll probably pick this game up, and if I'm really lucky, it won't be like when I pick up other games and they've moved on by the time I finish downloading to my console. So, but that's on me for sleeping on PUBG.
There are better games out there, like oh god,
like Apex Legends.
Thank you.
Just released.
Been playing a lot of Apex Legends.
Developed by our best friends. We don't know them personally, as far as I know.
Come on, you got this. The guys who made Titanfall
1 and
Titanfall 2.
Yep. I legit am brain farting now.
Come on, you got this, Neil. I'm not just...
Respawn Entertainment.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So... Neil. I guess I could say immediately, I only played 428 Shibuya, so putting that out there. it's actually really fun. It's gotten more serious. There's a new virus, coincidentally, in the same vein as Resident Evil. I've been getting more into viruses.
The banana virus.
Sorry, what's that?
It's the banana virus. It's transmitted via banana.
Is that real? Is that? I mean, if that was the plot twist, I would not be surprised.
Well, this is that game, right, where it has the five action characters. Yeah, and one of them is trying to spread bananas.
We really don't know how people are infected by the virus yet, but all we know is once it mutates, within 12 hours, it'll become airborne from the first person. So
I think a banana is an effective vector for a virus. Like, coming with the greatest epidemiological background here, I'd say that banana's an excellent choice because it's a like frequently consumed product. It's also a monoculture, so there aren't a bunch of species of bananas to have to mutate around. And it's already fit into the story with one of the characters like trying to spread it. It's found its patient zero, so to speak.
And that was all that needed to be said about Shibuya 428 or 428 Shibuya. Apex Legends came out, though. We have John or Jay Frey all day on assignment playing Apex Legends, maybe as we speak even. So maybe we'll hear about that at some point.
I'm enjoying it.
But you've been playing it.
Yeah, I've got about 3 victories in my layup.
Do you think Titanfall 3 dying for it was indeed the right call? Is it better than Fortnite?
As a resident, I don't really like the way Fortnite plays. So take this as you will. I am one of the few people who actually paid money for Fortnite when it was in its stage of, hey, this is a zombie-based fort-building video game.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually bought Fortnite, like the original game of Fortnite before it became Battle Royale Fortnite Battle Royale.
Yikes.
I don't really like Fortnite. Even as one of the people who paid for the original game of Fortnite, I enjoyed the original game of Fortnite, but it had its very bad issue of everyone would just go off in their separate directions until we had to do like the final builds, and then they would come together for the final build. So it was very lonely until one person actually got to story mission, the mission. But the Battle Royale of Fortnite, I'm not really a big fan of. I like Blackout Battle Royale for its tighter gameplay than Fortnite has, because it's Call of Duty instead of, you know, just some random developers decided to make a third-person shooter. I wasn't a huge fan of PUBG due to all of its glitches and its overall lack of polish. This game, I am enjoying. I like the fact that it's a new take on, it's in the Titanfall universe, but it's not about the Titans and the whole Titanfall aesthetic. It's saying that, hey, this universe is bigger than just these two military organizations that have access to unlimited resources to play war against each other with. Because, come on, man, you're calling down a giant fucking mech from the sky for pretty much every character at least twice in a battle. They've got unlimited resources.
Poor people got to play war, too.
Exactly. And this is how the poor people play war. In 3v3 battle death arenas. And may I say, I am enjoying the Metacritic user scores. The negative ones, at least.
Yeah. Do you have any you'd like to read off real quick?
Yeah. Yeah. This one's from Starus. What are these characters? Why is the only white guy a fat, toxic, hateable character? In a hero shooter, I like to have at least one or two characters that I enjoy visually, but the entire cast of characters in this game looks like they were from Soy Boy SJW Magazine 2018. Even the robot is some boring-looking, servant-looking bot. This stuff is worse than anything for games when they hide stupid messages and political junk in the game to twist people's minds. Here it's, look, the white guy is a fat, toxic, evil guy that can only pump gas on people, and all the brown people are heroic looking with badass skills and weapons. The game itself is a shameless clone of COD 4 and the other, you know them. There's nothing new or interesting except the game feels rushed and unbalanced. This is just another gambling simulator for the kiddies, where you spend 9 minutes running around looking to play slot machine and 30 seconds in it and actual firefight. I just love the fact that he's like, the only white guy is a fat, intoxicatable character.
And then he says soy boy a sentence later.
Very much so.
Why are all the brown people cool? I'm not okay with this. I've never thought to analyze my feelings as to why this might be bad.
Yep.
Yikes.
Anyway, I'm really sorry for writing that review. I'll take it down.
this is the tough situation I think a lot of people may be finding themselves in, is like Titanfall 2, and this is coming from a person that doesn't like first-person shooters to begin with, so...
Is an excellent shooter.
It's an excellent shooter, and it has a really good first-person or single-player campaign. Fantastic. Like, two thumbs up. Very good. Very, very well done, well written. And they put a lot of time into implementing these different mechanics. It's kind of like a... I hate to say it, but it's sort of like a Zelda progression in terms of, you know, using the unique mechanics for each quote-unquote stage or level, however you want to put it. And if you know about Respawn's history with EA, it's that basically EA is horrible, and they've basically stunted the possible growth for Respawn on multiple occasions, most recently with Titanfall 2, by forcing them to release it in the same block of time as its direct competitor, also under EA, which was, Future Warfare? Call of Duty, whatever, future. Call of Duty robotic dudes. Future robots.
No, you're talking Battlefield.
Is it Battlefield Future Robots? This is how much I don't care about first-person shooters.
Either way, no. It forced it to come out at the same time as Battlefield and Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
But Battlefield's the one that EA owns.
Right, yeah, you're right. My mistake there. But like that's the whole point. They force them to release it in direct competition.
In an already saturated market.
Yeah, exactly. While they're also releasing their own shooter as well. This is the EA tactic. This is also... Like, this is the same EA that has also forced BioWare to go down the Anthem ship. So it's like, BioWare is no longer BioWare. BioWare is now Anthem. Whether it fails or succeeds, BioWare is dead.
Mm-hmm. It fails.
Yeah, I don't see
I'm
it
not sure
succeeding.
I'm not sure if you played Anthem at all, but I played it.
You played the demo, I take it?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if it's quite out yet. Not to say that there's a possibility that Anthem is going to be able to succeed. But what I'm getting at, though, is that EA has a fucking shitty track record. And this just goes to show you that why we're not getting Titanfall 3 is because they needed to make a Fortnite. Well, a Fortnite with other things, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I want Apex Legends to be good and to succeed for Respawn's like livelihood. But at the same time, this just further encourages EA to like continue their shitty ass practices if Apex Legend, you know, becomes bigger than Fortnite. It's a lose-lose situation in my opinion.
So my thought on my thought on Apex Legends is I thought this was just a Respawn Entertainment just love child of like, hey, we're just going to spend like 10 minutes developing a battle royale shooter with fun characters that we think are fun and representative of our community, and fuck EA. And they kind of just like were like, oh yeah, EA, by the way, here's this file, release it, I guess, because they kind of announced the game and then it was out.
Yeah, which I mean, you're looking at it at this optimistic view and I'm looking at it from a pessimistic view. But why wouldn't you try and support a game prior to release? So let's say Apex Legends is a love
child. You don't
know
it's even a game.
Do we know that EA was blindsided by this release? I don't think it works that way, especially when you own the company. They own Respawn.
Mm-hmm. So I would think that EA wasn't blindsided by the release, but I was hearing, like, as soon as it came out, like, some rumor that the microtransactions weren't going to be, like, super horrendous because EA is not allowed to really touch much of Apex Legends, that it is strictly all on the board of Respawn Entertainment. I was also going through like 30,000 degrees worth of a fever at that point, so who knows?
What is undeniable is that it stomped just with player response. They had 10 million players within the first 3 days, with the breakdown being in the first 8 hours, more than 1 million people were on. And within the first 24, that already jumped to 2.5 million, according to Polygon's numbers.
And that's all without any commercials or anything.
I never heard of it. Yeah, it just exploded on Twitch.
Yeah, because they were like, hey guys, this is a free game. It's made by Respawn Entertainment, and it's got some really good features that I think should be implemented. Honestly, I think just a lot of games should just steal a lot of things from this, like Jump Captain. So with all battle royales, since you're all, you know, jumping out of their respective ships to glide down to wherever they're going, this game assigns a jump captain at random, and that jump captain actually gets to choose where everyone's going to land. If a person decides they want to split off from the jump captain, they can, but usually
then the jump captain is allowed to team kill immediately.
Actually, there's no team killing in this game.
That's too bad.
Also, no fall damage. Damn. And pretty much anything that you can see, you can jump onto. Whether or not that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing, it usually turns out to be a bad thing. But anything you can see, you can jump onto. But no, I really enjoy it. I am enjoying enjoying what I can play about this game, what I can play of this game, and what I have played of this game. And I think that Respawn is one day going to be split off from EA if that comes in the way of how Respawn Entertainment got split off from... Who did they originally split off from to form themselves?
Infinity Ward.
Yeah. Oh. So basically, yeah. No, that's... Yeah, I thought so.
Two senior employees from Infinity Ward.
Pretty much got together and were like, fuck Infinity. Fuck Blizzard, Activision. Let's do our own thing. And then they got by the worst of the companies. So hopefully they'll be like, fuck it. Everyone, just mass quit on EA. We'll form another one called Second Life Entertainment, I guess. Oof,
that is a whole different thing, Second Life.
Oh, yeah. Either way, I hope this game does well. It'll have at least its 5 minutes of fame as everyone is enjoying it, and it's guerrilla warfare type tactics / guerrilla warfare type launch. Because, damn, this game just came out of nowhere and flooded the market, and hopefully John will have a lot more information on it than I do, because it's confusing, but it's fun. It's a very tight shooter, and it's got great... It's got a great world, I guess. The map is meh, but what can you do about that? I digress.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I could be
wrong.
Look
at all these brown people. Look at all these brown people.
It could be that this game is a passionate project from the people at Respawn, but without knowing what really happened in there. I don't know. At the same time, I'm reading some quotes specifically from Drew McCoy. This is to Eurogamer. We're doing a free-to-play game with essentially loot boxes after we were bought out by EA, and it's not Titanfall 3. It's the perfect recipe for a marketing plan to go awry, so why have that? Let's just ship the game and let players play.
Oh, shit. So maybe I was wrong. Maybe it is just a, okay, guys, we don't want to be shut down by EA, because that's the worst thing that can happen.
I mean, yeah. There's a lot you can get from that quote, but the one thing that we can remember is that... I don't remember if it's McCoy specifically, but one of the guys from Respawn had very, very, like, not even passive-aggressive, but aggressive words in the middle of an interview with his EA counterpart when they were talking about the support of Titanfall 2. Like, this is a relationship that has been rocky for a while, and this quote doesn't seem to have nearly as much aggression as you would imagine it could have, and they've had towards EA in the past. I don't know. If this game becomes extremely successful, then I don't think we see Titanfall 3. And if this game is horrible, I don't think we see Titanfall 3. So it goes back to what I was saying before, where this is a rough situation for me, at least, because I don't play games that are extremely popular or happen to be like, you know, this week's or this year's
the flavor of the month.
Yeah, the flavor of the month. Thank you. That, like, I basically effectively lose out on the games I would want to play or games that could have been that I would enjoy. Then again, I did play League of Legends and do play League of Legends, and that was definitely a flavor of the month at some point in time. So I guess I had my time in the sun.
I was going to say, and you might enjoy some more flavor of the month games once shooters are no longer a thing.
I just wish that they didn't also, like, they could have stolen more from Titanfall 2 for Apex Legends. I realize there's other mobility options, but, like, there's no wall jumping. Is there double jump in Apex Legends? I didn't see it.
I don't think there's double jump, but I'm really fine with the lack of, like, all the stuff. The market got a little bit too saturated with the future jumping.
The grappling hook.
But it was so good in Titanfall 2.
It was okay.
And it also allowed people that were not good at the shooting to also be okay at the game by being hypermobile.
Touche. But this is a game where you're playing with other people, and you could slide real fast. The sliding is so much fun. Like, best sliding of 2019.
Does it feel similar to... oh, God, what's that Shinji Mikami game?
Oh, Shin Megami Tensei?
No, it's the robot one where you boost into your slide, and then you...
Are you talking the game with 2B in it?
Then it slows down. Can, no.
No, but 2B, that's also a very great game for other reasons. Vanquish.
Vanquish, yeah, that's right. I was going to say, I just saw some video of it the other day, and I could not remember.
Because every time you see Vanquish, it always looks good.
Because you're always sliding, and then slow-moing,
sliding in
and then
Vanquish.
Sliding some more.
The only time Vanquish doesn't look good is when there's a computer playing it that cannot handle the frame rate.
And then
what
it looks good
about?
Every 10 frames.
I'm sorry, we were talking about Apex Legends.
And mobility. And at least that they added those, from what I can tell from the videos that I've just seen, like the zip line and the, I guess, vertical line that shoots you
straight
up
or straight down. Oh, it's a lot of fun. They've got little balloons scattered around the world where you can actually zip line up those and then like paraglide.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. No, yeah. They've got some great ideas in this.
So they're just changing the function of how you utilize hypermobility in that case, because that slide is wicked fast.
Oh my god,
I've seen it. It's
the
very
longer you slide, the faster you go. You pretty much hit hyperspeed. But no, I like it. I like the fact that it's a different take on the Titanfall universe. No offense to you and your love for the actual like Titans in the Titanfall portion of Titanfall, but you know, this gives the universe more of a more roundness is my idea. Like, okay, no, now there are actually like different people, and I guess Apex Legends is also like a game show, maybe, I'm not sure. Either way, become legend.
Yeah, I'm sorry to get aggressive there, just
no, you're fine. Yeah. You wouldn't be a passionate nerd without passion or nerdism.
I could just be passionate and angry and not a nerd.
Or you could just be a nerd.
Then we'd be a politics podcast.
Just be passionate and angry, yeah. I don't think we could hang out that much at that point.
I don't know if there was anything else newsworthy I wanted to bring up this week. And it obviously wasn't important enough to jot down. So I think that might be this episode 106 of Fancy Ramen, name pending. Before I conclude, do you guys have any final thoughts or things you want to bring up? Any topics?
Next episode, we're talking about wild anime, The Promised Neverland. And if either of you haven't seen it, chug through the first 20 minutes in which I don't give a shit about this show and get to the 10 minutes of, oh my God, what's happening? Wait, it's not 30 minutes. I'm sorry. Let's say 15 minutes of boring, 7 minutes of holy shit, this is my new favorite.
Are we talking about Shield
favorite.
Hero?
No, we're not talking about Shield Hero. We're talking about the best horror anime I've seen in ages.
It's a horror anime, huh?
That one anime about the little kids?
Yeah.
The Promised Neverland.
If you're not hooked by the first episode, drop it. That's fine. But if you like the first episode, and by like the first episode, I mean make it all the way to the end, then stick with it, because it is, it's so good. It's so good.
Is it more psychological and less, quote-unquote,
very
scary?
Psychological. I heard it described, I am, I don't want to miss a tribute, but I'm almost certain that this was in YouTuber Gigguk's like winter anime review, and I skipped a portion of the review because I hadn't seen it yet, and I knew when he said like you need to skip past this timestamp because I'm going to talk about like spoilers right away, that I was interested. And then when he said it's more or less an elongation of the potato chip scene and Death Note for an entire show.
Nice.
Yeah, I knew it nice. it was going to be something I had to check out.
It's on me and Leslie's list of things to watch, but
oh,
I got
it's so
sick
good.
And died and I'll say I enjoyed Shield Hero.
Okay, I haven't seen more than like the first. I watched like the first 5 minutes of that, and then I was like, nah.
No, it's great. It's wonderful.
Anyway, I'm going to talk about that next time. So if you guys have seen it, we can talk about it. And if you haven't seen it, I'm going to spoil it. Or at least I'm going to spoil some of it.
Okay.
It's damn good. So
that's
be
fine.
Ready.
So if you have comments, questions, or corrections, you can write into podcast@fancyramen.com.
Or if you want to hear my soothing voice, tell your friends about the Fancy Ramen podcast so Neil doesn't have to shut us down.
Gather into a small group of three to evade the watchful eye of your captors. And then discuss the Fancy Ramen podcast and tell your friends about it. That's all I'll say.
What? Was that from the show?
No, I think he's playing Apex Legends because it forces you to be on a teams of three.
Oh, okay. I thought he was like giving out tips for other video games. Use
Who
a flashbang to evade the liquors and then tell your friend about Fancy Ramen podcast. Podcast@fancyramen.com. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
I'm Scott.
Have a great week, everyone.
Bye.